From 9 to 5 Mac, this is Stacktrace coming back to you for another week full of scoops and ice cream and fun and new information. How's it going, Mr. Guy Rambo?
Hey John, but ice cream is not good for your allergies.
Oh, I know. Well, it's okay. It's actually okay for my allergies. It's just the trees that is bad for my allergies.
Oh, so spring is not being very kind to you, I see.
Spring is never kind to me. It's like I prefer to go outside in the winter, which is really weird.
Yeah, I'm very lucky that I don't have these types of allergies.
Yeah, it's kind of lucky for me anyway, because I just have them like for 2 or 3 weeks every year, and it's right in the middle of the allergy season. So if I sound a little bit different, it's because the trees are poisonous to me.
Cool. I mean, not cool.
Yeah, it's not very cool, unfortunately. But I'm hanging in there, ready to do the show. You know, the show must go on. And
exactly.
What have you been up to lately?
Wow, so much stuff. So I'm preparing for NS North and App Builders. So I'll be traveling to Canada tomorrow as we record. So as you listeners listen to this episode, I'm probably on an airplane, some sort of airplane. And then on Sunday, I fly to Switzerland for App Builders.
Such a globetrotter.
Oh, yeah.
The Rambo World Tour.
It's
spanning two continents, so it's like half a world tour at least.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, I never thought of it like that. I should sell tickets.
Yeah, you should make one of those t-shirts with like the dates on the back, you know? Like the band
the
t-shirts
date.
Has with all the with all the concert dates on the back, but you will have the conferences instead.
Yeah, so I am one of those people who can't... I am physically unable to prepare talks too much in advance. So I just can't get myself to prepare a talk like 3 months before a conference. So I usually prepare the talk like at most a month before, but this time it was like 2 weeks before I started writing my talk and prepare the slides, which you animated for me. Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Yeah, you're very good at those animations.
I just love it so much. I just find it so much fun to use Keynote. I think I mentioned before that it's pretty much my favorite Apple app, not only in terms of functionality, but also the way it's laid out and designed. And it just kind of clicks with me. And especially the animations, like especially in the later versions of Keynote, where they have these text animations now and transitions and smart object transitions. Like there's so many things you can do and you can play around with it. And, you know, you can group objects together to animate them a specific way. And yeah, I'm just having so much fun with that stuff. And also like, it's not only for fun. Like, I also think that a well-animated presentation, like, I'm not talking about flames and confetti everywhere and this anvil effect, like, just, like, subtle but smooth animations, like, added in the right places, I think can really help with your narrative as well, where things are moving in a fluid way. Like, it makes the audience pay a little bit more attention, like not fall asleep, and also like can really help emphasize certain messages that you're trying to get across. Like if you are underscoring some code or something with an animation, like it can really draw the audience attention to where you need it to be.
Yeah, there was one particular slide, which I don't remember right now, where you added like some effect to the text. And while I was reviewing the talk with the animations, I realized that the animation actually helped highlight my opinion about the subject.
Right.
It's kind of like emphasizing what I'm saying. And yeah, it's really cool. I really love how it turned out. And I hope the talk goes well and people love it as well. It's always tricky. And this is something we could talk about for hours, but... developing a talk is complicated mainly because you don't know the people who are gonna be there to watch it. So you kind of have to think about making something that's not too basic, but also not too advanced that people who are just getting started can follow. And yeah, it's kind of tricky. So today I gave a talk at a Brazilian conference. It was a different subject. I talked about app extensions. And one of the things I asked at the beginning of my talk to kind of gauge the audience was, which of you here know what a target is in Xcode? because that's something you can be a pretty decent iOS developer and not really know about.
Yeah, especially if someone already set up the structure for you at your company, or if you're just using the templates and you're just saying like file new project and all the targets and schemes are already generated for you.
Yeah, and if you're working with app extensions, especially multiple ones, you have to be aware of the targets and how they work. I was kind of expecting it, but like very few people actually knew what they were. So I actually spent a little bit more time than I planned explaining what targets are. So that's the type of thing you have to do when you're preparing a talk. You have to think about things which you might explain really quickly, but depending on your audience, you have to expand a little bit.
Yeah, absolutely. It's always tricky. It's the same challenge that I have when I write articles, actually, where, you know, in the beginning when I was writing articles, I didn't think too much about it, and I try not to think too much about it now either. Like, I always want to keep writing in the same way that I've been writing, because that's just what I enjoy, and also I think that that's what kind of people tune in for, right? So I'm not really always trying to change things or to target some specific audience or something, but I do try to keep in mind that I want my articles to be as accessible as I can make them. And if that means like putting an extra sentence here and there just to explain something that you might think is obvious when you have this context of being a developer for X amount of years, or you've been working with Swift for a while, or you know about functional programming, or whatever the context is, it can just be a good idea, I think, to just add that extra little sentence or something just to explain it, just in case someone doesn't know. And it just makes it more welcoming and inviting, just to have that little extra explainer to make sure people don't get lost.
Yeah, that's a really good way to think about it. And yeah, it's also important to not think too much about it, so you don't get too paranoid and
You end up explaining everything.
Detailed. Yeah,
yeah, that's true.
So what have you been up to?
So since we recorded, I haven't been up to that much in terms of work, because we've had Easter here. So I've been traveling a little bit for Easter, been visiting some friends and family in the north of Poland. So we've been by the sea, having fun, relaxing, not working at all, pretty much. I did do a little bit of work before and after the holidays. So I've been working on some new developer tools. Hopefully there will be another open source spree pretty soon.
Yay!
Which I'm really looking forward to. I have a couple of tools that I'm working on, which I think are going to be pretty good. One of them, I kind of want to wait a little bit to see what Xcode 11 is going to be like before I release it.
Oh, and I think this was my suggestion, actually.
That was your suggestion. Yeah, exactly. I thought about it a little bit more, and I was like, maybe I should wait. We'll see. Maybe I'll get eager and hit the button sooner. But I've been really enjoying working on new developer tools, and this is something I've been enjoying for years now, like really trying to improve the tooling for developers on Apple's platforms, because I really believe that sometimes in our community, like in the Apple developer community, we are only focusing on the tools that Apple provides, like Xcode and the command line tools that come with it. But there's such a big potential for people to write their own tools, not necessarily to like reinvent the tools that Apple have given us, but to build great stuff on top of them. And this is what I'm usually trying to do, like to solve like common problems that I'm facing. Like whenever I'm facing a problem in almost every project that I'm making, I always try to write some kind of tool to address that problem. And this is where you're seeing like tools that I've already released, such as Marathon and Test Drive, and tools that just make it easier to do things like Swift scripting or trying out a new framework or whatever it might be that is something you need to do often, just to try to automate that in a nice way.
Yeah, that's really nice. As developers, we can make our own hammers. So
yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's pretty cool.
It's a really, really good thing to do.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mentioned on the last episode of the show that I also did a new episode together with Apple of Swift by Sundell with Michael Ilsman from the Swift team. And that episode is now out. We'll put a link in the show notes if you want to check that out. That was a lot of fun to put that together as well. A really nerdy deep dive into strings, which, you know, as you know, Rambo, I love strings. It's so much fun. It's really been something that I've been getting into more and more as just a fun and fascinating part of programming in general, like how to represent text, how to parse text, and how to do those things in an efficient way. So yeah, it was really fun to do that episode and really like go deep with Michael, who's been working a lot with the implementation of String. So who better to talk to, right?
Yeah, of course. I haven't finished listening yet. I had to pause to record this episode, but I'm going to go back to it later, and it's been great so far.
Excellent. Cool, but I think that we should now move on to our main topics. And of course, we have a big serving of scoops for you on this episode as well. And like always, with new info and some exclusives and a lot of fun stuff. So it's time to once again back up the Rambo ice cream truck where we see what's going to happen. So Rambo, what's in your ice cream truck this week? Is it another edition of
The Rambo Report?
Yes, it is. This week, the ice cream truck brings us Apple Watch authentication, which is expanding beyond just unlocking your Mac in the next version of macOS.
That's super cool. So right now, the Apple Watch is able to automatically unlock your Mac from sleep, right? So you walk up to your Mac, you just press a key on your keyboard, and you're in. Which is funny, because that's one of those features that I didn't realize how much I missed it when I wasn't wearing the Apple Watch. I mentioned on the last episode that I just got my Series 4, and I've just been wearing it now for a little bit more than a week, and I've kind of forgotten that I even had a password on my Mac, because it just automatically unlocks all the time. So that's such a nice convenience.
Yeah, and some people complain that it doesn't work very well for them. I've heard some complaints. I'm not sure what the situation is there, but for me, it's always worked very well. And it's funny, because I never use Touch ID to unlock my Mac, because it does have a touch bar and Touch ID, but the Apple Watch is so convenient. It takes just a second, and we are so lazy that even like lifting a finger and putting it on a sensor, better just wait.
Too much work, that, right?
Yeah, just wait that 1 second and it's done. And one of the things I've been thinking about now with my new, that I change my daily routine since I'm working part-time now, is I might want to invest in an iMac in the future, because I spend more time at home now.
Yeah.
So, and one of the things I was thinking about was how much I would miss Touch ID, because I use 1Password for everything. And not having to type my super long, complicated master password every time would be a nightmare. And the way this is going to work, it's likely going to work, is you'll be able to just unlock anything that works with Touch ID. You'll be able to also unlock with your Apple Watch. So not sure exactly the mechanic, but probably there will be something on the screen on your Apple Watch, and you can just tap a button to confirm. It can't be automatic, like the unlocking, because that would not be very secure.
So
you probably have to confirm it on your watch. But yeah, it's another method of authentication, and I think it's very welcome.
Yeah, that's super cool. It's something that I actually thought a little bit about when I set up my Apple Watch now this time, because the default on the Apple Watch is only to have a 4-digit passcode. And I thought about that because you are actually now, especially with cellular on the Apple Watch, able to use it to do a lot of things, like perform purchases and potentially destructive actions. So especially with something like this, where if you were be able to really like use your Apple Watch as the key to unlock lots of things like your 1Password vault, I would really want to have a really strong password on my Apple Watch. So right now I added like more digits, but I will probably like make an even more sophisticated password on the watch, just like I have on my other devices, just to make sure like the weakest link is not so weak.
Yeah, because ultimately you can unlock your Apple Watch using your iPhone. You can set like a really complicated passcode for your Apple Watch, and you can just unlock your iPhone while wearing your watch, and your watch gets unlocked as well. So I don't think that's necessarily a problem.
No, but it's just interesting how the default is so weak on the watch, and probably that will change if these features are going to be implemented, because otherwise that's a very like likely vector of attack. It's like someone just steals your Apple Watch and they could more likely brute force that password because it's only 4 digits.
Yeah, definitely. And there's been some rumors about, and I don't know anything about this, there are just rumors that Apple was working on improving text input on the Apple Watch. So yeah, we'll see how that goes.
Maybe the Apple Watch will have Face ID.
Well, maybe. I think the Apple Watch would be a good candidate for having a drawing-based authentication, kind of like most Android phones use, where you draw a shape on the screen. I think that would work very well with the Apple Watch.
Yeah, it could be really cool. But it, like you say, you also have that kind of chain of authentication where you start with your iPhone, it has Face ID, so you just look at your iPhone, that unlocks your Apple Watch, and then your Apple Watch unlocks your Mac, right? So it's kind of like Face ID by proxy. It's like everything is unlocked by Face ID from the beginning, but even it goes all the way to your Mac as well. So it's kind of like this chain of authentication.
Yeah, but your Face ID is a proxy for your iPhone passcode. So ultimately, your iPhone passcode is the key to your life.
That's the master key.
Yeah.
Yeah. This is super interesting. It would also be interesting to see if they are going to take biometric authentication in general, if we could include the watch as part of that, to more things. For example, sudo in the terminal. I know that there's some plugins you can install in order to enable Touch ID for sudo in the terminal and some other contexts, but it would be interesting to see like that kind of authentication to really become ubiquitous, the same way how biometric authentication has become really ubiquitous on iOS, where if you have Face ID enabled on the iPhone X, you pretty much don't ever need to input your password, like never ever, which is pretty cool.
Yeah, I believe if we have it as a mechanism like Touch ID, sudo on the terminal would be pretty much confirmed as well, because that's kind of, it's not like a third-party thing. It's a standard thing that you just have to enable. And by the way, this is kind of off-topic, but if the people over at 1Password are listening, you know what would be really cool? If 1Password could detect a password prompt in terminal, even if it's like an SSH session, because I do have my servers in 1Password as well. Imagine if you could authenticate even with a remote server using Touch ID on the Mac with 1Password.
Yeah, that would be super cool.
Free feature idea for you, 1Password people.
So generous.
Yeah.
Yeah, so really looking forward to seeing what authentication changes or improvements we're going to see in the next version of macOS. But we're not done with macOS. You have some other scoops about what might be coming in macOS 10.15.
Yeah, so we are going to be getting screen time on the Mac, which will be terrifying.
Yeah, it will be. And you think that will work similarly to on iOS, that it will measure like the activity in apps, that it will feature the same kind of controls and limitations, and you can lock apps if they are, you know, taking too much of your time and things like that?
Yep, pretty much the same mechanism, just on the Mac.
And it will work for both native, quote-unquote, native Mac apps and Marzipan apps? Or is this just a Marzipan thing, you think?
No, it's for all apps.
For all apps, okay.
Yeah.
Cool. And this is interesting. This is like a another trend which has been going on for a while, which is that features start their life on iOS and then eventually they come to the Mac. But even more so now with Marzipan, and we talked about it on the last episode, how dark mode for iOS pretty much became a necessity because there's dark mode on the Mac and now iOS apps are coming to the Mac. So we're starting to see really this blur of the lines between the platforms here, where there's going to be a lot of features that by necessity are going to have to be on both platforms. And also I'm going to guess that with Marzipan and with these future changes, more and more of the underlying infrastructure is going to be shared between platforms as well, which probably makes it easier to port features between platforms even for Apple.
It's shared a lot. Like the underlying functionality of everything on the system shares so much between the systems that they might as well be the same OS.
Yeah.
Like the core functionality of screen time is seeing which app you're using and measuring that. That's the core functionality. And it sounds simple, but it's actually quite complicated. But it does work on both OSs. So what they had to do for the Mac was adapt its behavior to the Mac and also like add the UI layer, so a preference in system preferences and the UI that shows up when you are using an AppKit app, and it's going to have to draw some UI on top of that app to say, hey, you're exhausted your limit with this app, type your passcode or something. So yeah,
no more Xcode for you, you've already worked enough today. Go play some game instead.
I wonder if they will have like a developer tools category or if they're going to use the productivity category.
Yeah, because on the Mac especially, it feels like a lot of people will pretty much only be using apps in the productivity section, right? Like they will be using Office or Photoshop or the iWork suite or Xcode. You know, if those are all just productivity, it feels like that's just going to be the 90 percentile category. Maybe that plus Twitter, right?
Yeah, for me at least, it will be that and Twitter.
Yeah. So that's interesting. And there seems to be other features coming to the Mac as well from iOS, such as Siri shortcuts.
Oh yeah, so the Swift shortcuts. This is Rambo from the future here. Just to be clear, I meant Siri shortcuts, not Swift shortcuts. API and probably also the shortcuts app are coming to the Mac. And this is another thing that when you think about it, it makes sense given the Marzipan project, because there are all these iPad apps that developers are going to want to check that macOS checkbox, which we'll talk about soon. And let's say they have intents and extensions and shortcuts integration. And then they have to add this like if OS, iOS or something to the code, and like if def out anything that's related to shortcuts and handle that in the UI. So that's not what Apple wants developers to do. They want developers to check a box and have their app run on the Mac. So at least as close to that as possible. And of course, they want developers to also do some extra work to make their apps work better on the Mac. But yeah, it makes sense to bring this major subsystem of iOS to the Mac to support these new apps.
Yeah, absolutely. Because to your point also, like if you would have to put these if-defs or conditional compilation all across your code base, it kind of defeats the purpose of Marzipan in the first place, right? Because at that point, yeah, it's like, could have just written another UI using AppKit and then used your model and logic layer and built a Mac app, which is what most cross-platform apps do these days anyway, if they're not using, you know, C++ or JavaScript or something. So definitely, like, I see a lot of these features as an indication of the plan, which seems to be that, like you've said also before, that it's just going to be as simple as just like checking a checkbox in Xcode, compiling, and then the feature parity should be there for the most part. You shouldn't have to really jump through a lot of hoops in order to support the Mac. Your iOS app, I mean, maybe there will be some kind of edge cases, like, you know, if you integrate with the phone kit, for example, maybe that's not going to work on the Mac. But for the most part, I'm going
to
guess that...
Well, let me tell you something, John. CallKit is coming to Marzipan.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Maybe they use that, you know, proxying mechanism that they have, right?
Yeah.
Where you can actually take a call on the Mac using your iPhone. This is all going like proxy full circle here, Rambo. It's like Face ID is authenticating your Mac, which is then making a call using your iPhone.
Yeah, but if apps that do this type of calling, like let's say WhatsApp, they use the web. They don't require a phone line. The only thing that requires a phone line is your phone itself, which nobody uses anymore. Only robocalls.
Right.
So yeah, there's really no reason for not having it on the Mac. You use it a little bit differently. You're going to always be using probably your AirPods or something to make the call, and the notifications will be a little bit different. But there's no reason why not have it on the Mac.
Yeah, that's super cool. Yeah, but anyway, I just see this as an indication of the plan, which seems to be that, you know, full feature parity and making it as easy as possible to adopt Marzipan, which is super cool.
Yeah, and there's also like some debate going on about, oh, but if they bring the Shortcuts app to the Mac, what happens to Automator?
Right, an Apple script and these kind of things.
Yeah, so let's think about, like, the best case scenario would be for them to add some capabilities to Shortcuts, which, to be honest, I don't know anything. I don't know if they will or if they will not. So just because I didn't say they will doesn't mean they won't. But maybe they'll add, like, run shell script to Shortcuts on the Mac. Why not? The Mac can do that. Maybe they'll have an action that's run Apple script. Or maybe not, because they want Shortcuts to be 100% compatible between the Mac and iOS. So, yeah, and what I think ultimately happens is that Shortcuts will be the automation on macOS as well. Because, let's be honest, people are not using Automator.
Yeah, and this is one of those things where the most high-level, easier-to-use tool will kind of win, right?
Yeah.
Where if you're going to get people at scale to automate things, like, you need things to be more user-friendly. And not to talk bad about Automator, I've been using Automator a lot.
Yeah, it's awesome.
I love that app.
Yeah.
But it's not something that I would introduce, like, my parents to, right? But Siri Shortcuts yeah. is something that I might introduce them to, because it's just simpler and more high level, and you more have these building blocks provided by apps, etc. So it seems like safer environments to do kind of quote-unquote scripting or automation in than something like Automator.
Yeah, and of course it will not have all the functionality initially, but this is the problem when you are talking about a transition. The end goal is to get rid of the legacy workflows. So Automator can be considered a legacy thing, and it's like people freaking out because they won't be able to rip CDs anymore if they remove iTunes. Like, eventually they will remove iTunes and you won't be able to rip CDs anymore, because nobody will need to do that anymore. And like, these today already, like, very few people in the grand scheme of things have to rip CDs. I don't remember the last time I saw a CD in person. So, yeah, it's like the world moves on and things change, and eventually the old things have to go away.
Yeah, exactly. And if you ever need to rip a CD, you can always visit our good friend Stephen Hackett's museum, right? Where he's going to have an iBook just for you with a perfect CD drive.
Yeah, definitely. So yeah, I think it's the natural course of things in when you talk about computing, these transitions, eventually the quote-unquote legacy way of doing things ends up going away, and you have to adapt to the new.
Yeah, and there's always going to be the option, or maybe not always, but at least for now, there's going to be the option of, if you need more powerful automation, you can do shell scripting, right? So yeah. You mentioned that there might be like a Siri Shortcut plugin or action for shell scripting, or maybe the big reveal at WWDC this year is going to be shell scripting is coming to iOS.
Why not? It's not impossible.
It's running OS 10, right?
Yeah, iPhone runs OS 10.
It's got everything we need. It's got shell scripting. All right, super cool. We have even more things to talk about regarding Scoops and the Rambo Report and about the WWDC. But before we do, let's take a very quick break and thank this episode's sponsor, which is our good friends at Withings. Withings and 9to5 Mac have teamed up for April's Deal of the Month to offer a special 20% discount on Withings' sleek Wi-Fi scale for a limited time during April when you visit withings.com/stacktrace. The scale is called Buddy Plus, and it works with the Withings HealthMate app on the iPhone and Apple Watch to automatically sync readings, not just for weight, but also for body fat, water percentage, muscle, and more. And it all goes directly also to Apple's health app as well. You'll of course also see your weight and body data displayed in real time on the scale itself. It's got a big and bright display, which also shows you your weight trend for the past week and even a daily weather forecast as well. The Body Plus features an incredibly sleek and high-end design with a large surface that's easy to stand on. It's made from high-strength tempered glass, and it features a paint-free casing as well. Another cool feature of the Body Plus is that it supports multiple users, and it automatically detects who is standing on the scale, and it automatically syncs each person's data to their own device. There's also a built-in baby mode, there's a pregnancy tracker, and it's all connected to the HealthMate app. So I've been trying to lose some weight recently myself, and Withings were kind enough to send me one of this Body Plus scales. And it's been really great for me in order to keep track of my health goals. It was super quick and easy to set up, and using it is just as easy as any other scale. You just step on it. It just gives me more rich data, which makes it easier for me to see whether or not I'm on track to achieve my goals. I no longer have to write things down manually, and I also get lots of interesting facts like my hydration levels and water levels and my fat mass, which was embarrassingly high, I must say. So make sure to check out this Body Plus Smart Scale from Withings and to take advantage of 9 to 5 Max Deal of the Month, which gives you a 20% discount by visiting withings.com/stacktrace. You can also get the very same deal from Amazon as well, and there's also a link in the show notes for that. Either way, you help support me and Rambo and our work with this show and Stacktrace. So again, go to withings.com/stacktrace for 20% off the Body Plus Smart Scale from Withings. Thanks so much to Withings for sponsoring Stacktrace. All right, so one part of WWDC, which is for us and for many people the biggest part, is all the new developer tools. So you also have some new information about what we might see for developers as well, Rambo. So why don't you tell us about Siri, Marzipan, AR stuff? Like, there's a bunch of things in here. What's going on?
Yeah, so new Siri intents, media playback, search, voice calling, event ticketing, message attachment, train trip, flight, airport gate, and seat information.
Hooray!
Lots of stuff.
Does that mean that I'll be able to get what gate my Lufthansa flight is departing from while listening to Spotify and changing the Spotify song while maybe ordering some food and buying a ticket to a concert?
Yeah, sure. Why not?
That's amazing.
Yeah, that sounds really cool. And I think maybe they are expanding the media capabilities of Siri, maybe because of that Spotify thing.
Don't you think that's a little bit like when people say that they tried to get Touch ID under the screen to work in June, but they gave up because it was only 2 months left until the phone was going to go on sale? It feels a little bit like that was the plan all along, but it just took a while for them to get right because, you know, media playback is not as trivial as just like request response, because you will need some way to actually identify all the content.
Thank you very much for bringing that up, because that I was expecting you to say that.
Yeah, you set me up, Rambo. You're always setting me up. But yeah, I think that there is a reason why it's been taking a little bit longer. And we know how it is with these APIs, and we talked about it before on the show, that also one strength of Apple's API design and the fact that Apple's APIs are incredibly good. Like, sure, sometimes we can complain that there's a bug here in UIKit there or whatever.
AV player layer with player.
Right, exactly. But they are good for a reason, because they use them themselves, they perfect them, they work out all the bugs, and then they release them. So I'm also not surprised that sometimes it takes a while for them to make some of these APIs public.
Yeah, the main issue with media playback is that, like, let's say you have a messaging app. You are messaging with your contacts. So you know the names of all contacts you have on your contact book. So if you need Siri to understand the name of a specific contact, let's say I want to call John Sandel. I can say John Sandel and it will understand what I said. But it will understand what I said because it learns from the names on my contact book. And if you have music, that's a very different problem, because you can't have the entire collection of music from the entire planet inside your device for Siri right. to learn from. So that's a whole nother level of difficulty that requires probably some sort of server-side integration. So yeah, that's very tricky.
And you also have a lot of ambiguous names, right? Where you can say the name of an artist and sometimes that can match like many different artists and you want to then select which one. So it basically requires Siri to have this like ongoing back and forth with a third-party app or service. And that requires networking and a lot of things. So yeah, like you say, like when you have something like contacts or just a simple command that you just pass on to the app, that's way simpler than having to do that back and forth.
Another thing with music is that it's very likely that you'll have Siri play some specific artist or song whose name is not in your language, so not the language you have Siri set up for. So my Siri is always in English, and sometimes I listen to Korean music, and yeah, how does that work? So, and it's actually pretty good if you're playing some music from another language, and you ask Siri what's playing, it's going to actually switch to the voice in that language if you can detect the language. Kind of cool.
That's very cool. I wonder why they don't do that for text messages, because that's a running gag in my family, because most of us in my family, like, we have Siri set to English, but we're all Swedish. So we text each other in Swedish, but then Siri reads it in English, which just sounds incredibly hilarious. I've been wanting that feature for a while, that they would automatically detect that this is a Swedish text message and read it using the Swedish Siri instead.
Yeah, we'll see. They are improving the keyboard for multilingual input in iOS 13, so maybe Siri will get some improvements in that area.
Nice. Siri has been taking Duolingo classes.
Oh, yeah. So let's talk about Marzipan. We haven't talked about Marzipan enough.
Yeah, no. Yeah. I mean, Marzipan is super exciting. Like, it's so exciting from so many different ways. Like, as a user, as a developer, yeah. From a technical point of view, everything is exciting about Marzipan.
Of course. By the way, I actually tried Marzipan, the sweet.
Oh, yeah? You haven't tried it before?
Yeah. It's good. I had it with chocolate.
Ooh, that's a very good combination. Yeah.
Yeah, very good. A little bit too sweet to my taste, because I'm not a sweet kind of person, but yeah, it was really good.
Yeah.
All right, so it's going to be better than it is now, which I think many people will be happy about. So Marzipan apps will be able to spawn multiple windows, which is a problem at the moment. That's not possible. Split views in Marzipan apps. So if you have an iOS app that has a split view, it's going to behave more like the Mac split view, where you can drag the divider to resize the split view. And you can also double click the divider to reset it to the standard size. So that's going to be very handy, and it's going to make these Marzipan apps feel more like Mac apps. Also, UIKit apps on the Mac will have special APIs to talk with the touch bar, to configure the menu bar, including keyboard shortcuts. And it's going to be very easy to enable macOS for an existing iPad app. It's just like enabling iPad for an iPhone-only app. You basically just a checkbox. This app can run on iPad and the Mac.
So hashtag Rambo was right.
Yeah, Rambo was right.
Yeah. Well, yeah, that's really fascinating. I mean, it hasn't been revealed yet, so we can't take it for granted, but it sounds like that's what's going to happen. And if that's indeed what's going to happen, it's going to be incredibly impressive that they managed to pull that off, that you would just be able to click a checkbox and just have it work automatically.
Yeah, and that brings us back to the API availability thing we talked about. Because if it's the same target, then it gets really complicated, because then you really need to be able to not have to like conditionally compile code. You can, of course, conditionally execute code, like if user interface idiom is user interface idiom Mac, which is a thing, by the way. There's a new user interface idiom for the Mac. So for those who are not developers, this is what we use on iOS to know if we are running on an iPhone or an iPad. They call it the interface idiom. So you have the idiom for iPhone, the idiom for iPad, TV, watch, car for CarPlay, and you have the idiom for the Mac.
Nice. Yeah, that's going to be really useful because even though we talked about that you usually want to execute the same code or at least compile the same code, sometimes you want to take different code paths depending on the idiom and just make some slight tweaks. Like, in general, it's a good practice, I would say, to design and build an app to be very scalable, regardless of which device it runs on. But sometimes you do want to make those small little tweaks. You might want to change the position of a button for larger screens, or you might want to change the size of your targets for the Mac because it's going to have a mouse pointer, so you can have smaller targets, maybe fit more content onto the screen, etc. So yeah, I think that's going to be pretty useful to have that as well.
Yeah, and having a separate idiom for the Mac could also suggest, but I don't know for sure, but it could also suggest that the UI elements are going to be drawn slightly differently than on iOS.
Yeah, exactly. And it seems to be the general strategy, right? Like, it seems like Marzipan will really shine if you're building your app mostly using, like, system components and the classes that Apple provides, for example, split view controllers and things like that, because when you do, they can automatically translate them and change their appearance and change their behavior, you know, for the specific platform. And I'm going to guess that that's going to extend both to, like, buttons and sliders and everything, all the different UI components really that we have. So that's going to be also, you know, interesting to see the apps that do mostly use system components, how easy those are going to be to port, and probably that the ones that do really custom UIs are going to require a little bit more work.
Yeah, definitely. And the thing is, on iOS, custom UIs, they are all over the place.
Yeah, even for apps that look like they use mostly system UI, usually have a lot of customization because that's just been the paradigm. The paradigm has been, oh, I want to have a new screen. I'm going to subclass the UI view controller and, you know, build my screen. Or I'm going to need a table view cell. I'm going to subclass UI table view cell and build my cell. So that's been like the general convention for a long time to really subclass and customize everything.
And it's something I've talked about before, that even things that look very iOS-y, you have to write that yourself, like those big rounded buttons that Apple uses everywhere. That's not standard. You have to write that. You have to customize the UI button to look like that. And
yeah,
if you set like a background on your button to a specific color, then it's not going to work in dark mode.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, so there's going to be quite a bit of work involved, I think, especially for this system-wide dark mode. But I think many apps that already have a dark mode, they will just like read the preference from the system and just use that to switch to their own dark mode.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah. So there's going to be some new AR stuff.
Yeah, that's super exciting. You are the biggest fan of AR, right?
Oh, yeah, so much.
Yeah, I'm excited about AR, and especially that there seems to be new hardware in the works as well. I mean, we've talked about it before that they probably have some kind of AR glasses in the works in the prototyping lab somewhere, but you've started to see evidence of this already in your information that you've had access to.
Yeah, so there will be a new Swift-only AR framework. Not exactly sure what this AR framework is about, but it is for AR apps. So maybe it's a UI framework, maybe it's some other rendering framework like SceneKit. We don't know, but that is a new AR framework. There's also an app to make like AR, design AR scenes, which is interesting. So I'm not sure if maybe they're moving the SceneKit editor outside of Xcode or something, but that's definitely interesting. And also, the OS will now support controllers with touchpads and stereo AR headsets.
Headsets as in plural? Multiple headsets?
I don't know. It's just like driver, let's say, for, I don't know, it's support for AR stereo AR headsets.
I'm thinking also, like, does it say specifically AR? Because I'm thinking if it's just headsets, maybe it could be something where the iPhone can connect to, like, VR headsets or something like that, like, game for gaming, especially if you are also bundling that with controllers. It sounds like something that might be more geared towards gaming.
What I heard was stereo AR headsets.
Okay, AR specifically,
so
right.
Specifically AR.
Got it.
And not like Apple's AR headset.
Okay.
But we know Apple, and remember size classes?
Right. There could be some resizable phones coming at some point in the future from some manufacturer.
Yeah, like, let's say they bring a partner that has, like, some sort of headset, and they say, oh, and it would be really cool if your apps worked with this external cool new AR display that our partners have, or that this so-and-so company has. You know, you should make sure your app works with an external AR headset, because, you know, someday maybe some company may come out with some AR headset.
Right, exactly. Yeah. Do you think we might see any information about this at the show, at WWDC? Do you think there might be, you know, actually some hardware being shown on stage?
From Apple?
Any company.
From Apple, I think very unlikely. From some company, yes.
But is there any company making AR-specific hardware?
Well, as a lover of AR, I'm very informed in that area.
Yeah, you read AR news daily.
Yeah, I don't even know what an AR headset is. I think it's just like, I can only think of Apple glasses.
Right, yeah. I mean, that's, I think, the conclusion most of us jump to is that, you know, if you would have some kind of AR hardware that you could use anywhere, it would have to be really lightweight like glasses. But then you have stuff like the HoloLens, right? Which, I guess Microsoft, they call it mixed reality. But I could also see Apple calling something like that more like AR. Because, you know, you can't throw too many terms in there. And at the end of the day, you are augmenting reality. Sure, you can get down to the specific technicalities, but there could be something like that that is like mainly to be used in an office or work environment, you know, that we didn't hear about because it's manufactured in small scale and it's built by some company we don't follow daily or something like that.
Yeah, and there's been rumors about the new Apple headset going into mass production in late 2019. So, I don't know, maybe there will be some sneak peek. They will definitely need developers for the new device. So, who knows? But, yeah, I'm skeptical. I think we'll only hear about this new device next year.
Yeah, I think so too. It seems to be a little bit too early, and also it seems to be something that they would probably want to show as at a more consumer-focused event, even though WWDC is, of course, like the keynote is more or less like a normal press event, but still, like, it feels, if we would see some kind of hardware, that would be truly mind-blowing.
Yeah, definitely. So I'm curious to see how they're going to position this. And following this, there's also going to be more control over the Taptic Engine for developers. We'll be able to have pretty link previews like iMessage in our apps. And there's going to be some improvements to the NFC stuff with being able to read more types of NFC tags. Currently, only NDEF tags can be read. You'll be able to read other types of tags as well. But something that's very interesting is CoreML will have the ability to update the model's own device.
Yeah, that's been a very, very common requested feature from people who are getting into machine learning. Because, you know, if you want to do machine learning on device, you pretty much want to be able to update those models dynamically. Because, sure, you could download new models and things like that from the server, but then you're kind of like, why are you even doing it on the device in the first place? So continuously learning and improving your models on the device could be a really big step forward for complete on-device machine learning, because that's really what Apple is going for here, in contrast to companies like Google, for example, which are mostly pushing machine learning in the cloud, where you are sending a request, the machine learning happens on the server, and then you get a response back. And then you can update the models anytime you want because it's on your server. But if you have it on the device, like being able to do on-device machine learning is going to be a big improvement. And Apple, they are already doing this. It's another instance of them using the technology themselves for a few releases and then opening it up to the wider public later.
Yeah, that's definitely gonna be welcome.
Yeah, so you've been really on fire lately, Rambo. Like, you've been, we've been making this joke about the ice cream truck and all the scoops, and you've been really stepping up your game here. And one thing that I think a lot of people have been pointing out as well, like reading your articles and things like that, is that you also seem to have evolved your spelunking workflow, where before you were mostly like getting into the code and things like that from public releases. So you were like reverse engineering and looking at the assembly code and things like that. But you seem to have expanded your sources and the way that you gather information lately. So I think a lot of people are curious how you're actually getting your hands on this kind of information. And while I understand you can't reveal specifics, it would just be interesting to hear like what has changed in your workflow lately to enable you to really get these big scoops.
Well, this has been developing for a while. It's not something that like, oh my God, I woke up one day and everything changed.
You were bit by the same radioactive spider as Mark Gurman.
Yeah. Yeah, that's not what happened. And another thing I want to make clear is that every post I write has some information as to what's the source. So my recent posts all say something to the effect of according to sources familiar with the development or something like that. When it says that, it's because it's human sources. So yeah, it's someone who told me. And when it's not like that, it's always very clear, like found on iOS 12.3 beta, whatever. Because I see some people on Twitter very confused, like, how did you find this on an iOS beta? And no, I didn't find it this on an iOS beta.
Right, exactly.
So, yeah, just read the article. It's right there. When there isn't something that's found in code, it's always explicit in the article. This was found on iOS 12 dot whatever. And this is not the first time I'm publishing stuff from human sources. Last year, we had some pretty good information about the iPad Pro before the October event, and that was from sources as well. So, yeah, it's just like evolving and changing a little bit the source material for the publication.
Yeah, and how does that change your process? Because when you are looking at hard facts, you're looking at, you know, assembly code, or you're looking at some strings or glyphs or some other assets that you found, or sometimes you're requesting a public URL and you see a picture of the new iPhone, right? So how does that change? Because when you're talking to people, you have to kind of trust what they're saying, right? So what's that process like for you? And how has that changed compared to when you're just looking at code and things like that?
Well, first of all, I don't follow Apple employees around or stalk them or anything like that. Every single human source I've got so far came to me.
Right.
So they started the conversation. It wasn't me. And one way you can confirm, not confirm, because nothing is ever confirmed until Apple says it on stage. Yeah. All this stuff we talked about, it could be canceled before it's officially announced. It could not be ready for WWDC. So that's the disclaimer there.
And as we've seen, it can even be canceled even after it has been revealed on stage, right?
Yeah. But what you can do is that sometimes they provide evidence. Like for the, and of course the evidence can be faked sometimes, but we have a pretty good idea when it's fake and when it's not, just from experience.
Yeah.
Like someone sent us recently like, oh, a picture of the new iPod Touch, and it was like completely fake. And no, it was like a glyph that was supposedly found on iOS, and it was not even centered on the icon. Remember that? That was kind
right,
of funny.
Yeah, I do.
So sometimes there's evidence, like the icons for the new TV and podcast apps on the Mac that we published a couple of weeks ago. And sometimes you are able to cross-reference sources. So some source says you something and you try to bring that up with another source. And if multiple sources which you know work at this stuff give you the same information, it's pretty likely that it's true.
It's like a detective. You're like a detective.
Yeah, exactly. And
from spelunker to detective, it's like a promotion.
And it requires knowledge as well as to what's going on. Like, you have to know what's going on in the world of Apple, and what makes sense. Like, if someone comes up with some crazy information, I'll probably know that it doesn't make sense. So yeah, it's just a lot of hard work and detective work as well.
Yeah, but the interesting part is that last part that you say, because you have much more technological like experience than most people. I mean, even than your average Apple developer, I would say, just because you've been looking so much under the hood, you've been looking at all these details and the frameworks and how they connect to each other. So I'm also going to guess that, you know, that can help you a lot, where when you get this kind of information from different sources, you can also see what's been going on under the hood, and you can kind of verify those changes. Because, you know, even though a change hasn't been announced, it probably a lot of underlying work needs to be done in order for it to happen. So you can probably track the movement of different frameworks and how the code bases have changed over time, right?
Yeah, definitely. That's something that helps a lot, knowing how the OSs work and how they're structured and how different pieces connect to each other. Definitely helps a lot.
Awesome. Cool. So looking forward to seeing more scoops from you in the future, and hopefully we'll have something left as a surprise for WWDC. But there usually is. There usually is surprises, yeah, either way. And there's always like the interesting story of how things are connected and, you know, the grander scheme of things. So I'm always of the opinion that even if we know some things here and there, like, that's just like a trailer. It's just a teaser, right? And then you go to see the actual show, which is WWDC, which I'm really looking forward to.
Yeah, this year we even got a teaser of Platform State of the Union, which was right, this latest post.
That's true. Yeah, exactly. So this is going to be a little bit shorter episode than usual. You know, you can maybe hear it on my voice, but my allergies are really doing a number on me. Hopefully I will feel better next week and we can do a more longer episode and talk about more rumors and more things and do some more Ask Stack Trace questions as well. So feel free to send us questions for the show. Just tweet it with hashtag AskStackTrace, and we'll try to do a couple of questions next week, which will be a pretty special episode because,
oh yeah,
me and Rambo, we will actually be recording in person in Italy.
That's gonna be really nice.
Yeah, maybe over some nice pasta or something. Maybe you'll hear some sounds in the background of Rambo eating pasta. Who knows?
I don't think that would be very good for the ears.
Yeah, right. All right. But until then, thanks so much for listening, everybody. Thanks so much to our good friends at Withings for sponsoring this episode. And make sure to check them out at withings.com/stacktrace. And that's about it for this episode. You can find me on Twitter. I am at John Sundell. You can find Mr. Rambo at _inside. But until next week, say goodbye, Mr. Rambo.
Goodbye.